Hello, and welcome to This Epic Life, the podcast. I'm your host, Bailey Bena Andrade, and I'm here today with the CEO of Epic Education. And last episode, we focused on textbook companies and some of the policies that are not so great for our kids in the public education system. Nicole Kukral really broke it down and shared some of her experiences in interrupting some of these systems. So today we want to take a little bit of time to further explain and go over some of these problematic policies and what we should be doing about them. Mm-hmm. So Nancy, from an equity perspective, mm-hmm. we're going to be going over this. So to start off, Nicole mentioned that these textbook companies make multiple versions of the same history, but changing the perspective of the story. Mm-hmm. So why do we see this happening with these textbook companies?
You know, I think it comes down to, and I mean, I can't tell exactly why, but this is some of my thinking about it, is that, you know, different states have, you know, different leanings. So, you know, more conservative, more religious, they don't like their kids to be taught about, for instance, evolution, you know, and so I think what they do, and in order to kind of appease everybody, they're printing different versions that will appeal to the mindset of the area that they're selling it to. So you'll find that California, for instance, will have much more liberal versions in their textbooks that speak much more to equity and social justice, or you know, evolution, or just, you know, things that might in other states like Texas be what they choose. But I think the real problem is that we're calling it history, right? And that for me is the issue. It's this revisionist history. And so I'll give you an example. There's one that comes from a geography textbook, and it says, the Atlantic slave trade between the 1500s and 1800s brought millions of workers from Africa to the southern United States to work on agricultural plantations. Well, just that language alone, this notion of that slaves were workers and that they worked on these plantations as if they were receiving a wage, that they weren't kidnapped from their home, you know, countries and brought against their will to a new country and forced labor for generations, for multiple generations, right? And so to call them workers is misleading. And what it does, if you're young and you don't quite know the history yet and you don't have the ability to discern the difference, you think that it's not as egregious as it was, mm-hmm. right? And so it really is, for me, problematic that we're teaching this to young people as if it's fact, as opposed to teaching the truth. Like that was a heinous, it was a heinous practice, right? And we need to acknowledge it, and we need to learn from it so that we don't repeat it again, and then we need to move forward. But to teach it this way takes the impact, and it's insulting, honestly, to the people. And that's just one example. I mean, the way that Indigenous people are represented and really literally pushed off into the margins of the textbooks, where we don't have any real counter story about what it was like for them to have their land stripped away from them and the genocide that happened, right? And so we don't teach it that way. And so it's problematic.
Absolutely. I think that's a great example of that phrase, how language holds power.
Yeah.
It holds so much power in that, you know, yes, it's a word and a phrasing, but that is completely shaping someone's perspective on that and allowing, like you said, the egregious acts to be looked at as if they weren't
yeah.
who they were.
Yeah.
Yes. So what are the larger implications that we see due to these problematic textbooks
in our society? I mean, it's a miseducation of our youth, right? But also those young people grow up and they begin to minimize the experiences of oppressed people in this country. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't know the truth, then when people are talking about reparations or, you know, having reactions and responses to actions that are happening, people think they're overreactions because they aren't actually really taught the truth of how egregious the acts were against them. So it's kind of this mentality of just get over it, why are you still complaining about this? You know, with the election of President Obama, you know, everyone was saying we're post-racial. Well, we have found out now that we're not post-racial. And we've never been post-racial. In fact, this country was founded on racism and historic oppression and genocide. And until we're telling that story, then we'll continue to have people who will question, why, people of color in this country can't just get over it. But, even now we're seeing folks who are saying that the Holocaust wasn't, they're Holocaust deniers, or that it wasn't as bad as they said. I mean, I don't know how bad it has to be before you acknowledge that genocide is genocide of a people based on their religion and their culture. So for me, that is probably the worst I would say impact of this misinformation is that you get people who choose to deny it and then minimize it, and then we're in danger of repeating it again.
Right. And I know this wasn't a prepared question, but I think it just popped up and is very relevant as far as all of these monuments of past slaveholders and who are now being asked to be torn down. A lot of them have been torn down, and then people feeling like, oh no, you're erasing our history, that whole argument to defend it. I mean, what do you have to say to that as far as like what this history actually is and how we should be dealing with this?
Yeah, it's interesting because, is it erasing the history or is it, basically, I can't remember the quote, but it was something like the North won the battle, but the South won the war. Right? Because even though it was the end, the Civil War kind of marked the end of slavery as we knew it, the way the South handled it by erecting all these monuments to Confederate leaders and to all these prominent slaveholders, they basically kept this myth alive, and they kept the kind of the whiteness and the white privilege alive by putting these monuments up and saying, okay, even though we lost, we honor you for your sacrifice. And so they actually made the aggressor the victim in some ways. Yeah. And so you have all these people who support, that history, but they haven't told the true history. They haven't told the history of the people that the whole Civil War was fought for. It's about what we choose to pay attention to and what we choose to ignore. Forget the fact that millions and millions of Black people died and were enslaved for generations. Let's celebrate the people who tried to keep them oppressed, right? And so I think it comes down to morals about who, what history do we want to teach? And I don't think that history should be omitted. I think that history is important. But do we need monuments to, it's like having a monument to Hitler or to, people who caused great harm to humanity?
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's not about taking them down, pretending like they never existed.
Right.
Right. It's about, if we really want to address this history, then let's go into these textbooks and put down who were these guys.
The truth, and also, and it's not that they're not telling the truth of who they were, but they're celebrating the oppressor. So that's what we got to get to. It's a celebration of the oppressor. It's not that they're not telling the truth. They're telling the truth about who these people are, but they're celebrating them as if they, these iconic men were heroes, and maybe for them they are, but then we can't be post-racial either. You can't have it both ways, right? We can't say we're post-racial and it's our history when you're celebrating and trying to long for, kind of the antebellum time in history where Blacks were slaves or serving it, right, to people. So either you support this and you're a racist, and then call it so. But you can't have both. And, sometimes it is an ugly truth. I think that's part of it. We keep, the phrase is weird, like whitewashing the truth to make it more palatable and to show us in a better light. But the truth is the truth. And we have a past that we need to reconcile mm-hmm. in the United States of America.
Right. Yes. And I think there's a lot of rhetoric coming from the federal government right now and the White House, especially about wanting to create this pro-American kind of educational material mm-hmm. and how we need to be teaching our kids about being patriotic and stuff like that. To me, as I've grown and kind of reflected on some stuff, it's like already we are being fed a lot of patriotic material about, you know, not wanting to step into this zone of reflection and where we came from. Like, I feel like part of me feels like there's like this denial that needs to happen for us to continue feeling like, you know, we are the number one power and that we should be proud of it. That's my own personal journey that I've.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is that, I mean, whether or not we tell the truth about our history, we are still a superpower. I don't know how long that's going to last, but we are still considered a superpower, right? And so the truth would just mean that we would, by knowing the truth, it forces us, I believe, to be responsible. But there was a quote by Margaret Wheatley that she was talking to a group of people, and she said, you know, the problem with your thinking is that you think they care, right? And I think there's something to that, is that like we are the work that we do, the work other people do around equity and diversity, we are appealing to like people's higher morals, higher values, higher self, right? We're appealing to people's sense of humanity. And that quote constantly reminds me, it's like, but we think that people care. And I know that there are people who care, but what I also have to remind myself is that there's really people who don't care. There's people who don't care about me as a value, as a human life. There's people who don't care about you. It doesn't matter your skin color, and don't care about this work because it's in opposition to what they seek and what they believe. And so, you know, this appeal to our higher selves and humanity, I don't know, sometimes it feels like it's falling on deaf ears. When I think about the broader sense, of course, there's lots and lots of people doing this work and doing amazing work. And it's going to take all of us mm-hmm. to do this work, right? Yeah. It's going to take all of us. And for us to constantly be willing to speak out, you know, against systems like, you know, textbooks, against systems like, you know, some of the legislation that would separate us and divide us. To continue to be seekers of truth in its true form, looking at primary sources and really challenging the myths and lies and distortions that were being fed.
Yeah, and I know, like you've said several times, you know, not talking about the people extreme on both sides, but for the most part, people want to be good and they want to do good for each other. I think there's just a lot of, like we talked about, miseducation, where it's become this barrier of like, we don't even realize to the full extent of what we're going up against, what we're working against, like internally and externally.
Mm-hmm. And it's also become like a exercise in competition, right? It's like, in order for me to have mine, somehow Bailey, you have to give up yours, right? And that's not what we're about at all. It's about how do we ensure equitable access for all citizens of this country to be able to participate in the benefits of this country that this country has, you know, and why should we be deciding who gets what and who has access to what based on something as artificial as our skin color, mm-hmm. You know, and so, but until we can rectify the race issue, the skin color, you know, language issues that we have in this country, and really begin to see people as Americans and what that means. Like, I'm as American as you are, then we're going to continue to have issues. You know, I find it fascinating when I look at some of these, you know, videos of people, you know, shouting, "Go back to where you came from," and, you know, white folks, and I'm like, "Where did you come from?" I mean, the only indigenous people to this land are the native populations, you know, and that would be, you know, Mexico and the Native Americans that were here, and indigenous people from, you know, Canada, Alaska. I mean, there were no white people here. There were no black people here. They were all brown people on North America. And so, you know, and so that for me is part of the mental illness, I think, is that you can be so critical of someone else without any self-reflection of your origins and where and where your family came from, and that we are all, you know, we're all here, and that could have been, it could have been a great recipe for synergy, for, you know, all us to be truly the best that we could be. Mm-hmm. And right now it's turning into a recipe of like this, like, you know, questioning who belongs here and who doesn't, you know, based on the color of your skin.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're in a hard place right now. But that, you know, I got to stay positive and think that, you know, there's great possibility that can come out of this conflict and hopefully make us better, you know, for each other, right, for humanity, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all you really can do, you know, and, you know, do the work that you're doing. I mean, you're living it, and you're spreading the message as far and wide as you can. And the thing that's so awesome and powerful about this work is once people, I feel like, lean into it and their eyes are open to it, then they realize, like, whoa, you know, what my, like, mind and thinking and how I've been navigating this land has, it changes when all of a sudden the perspective and reality is opened up to you.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's definitely a great possibility for expansion, right? Mm-hmm. Expansion of thought, expansion of belief, expansion of acceptance and allowance. Mm-hmm. You know, and I hate the word tolerance, but it, you know, that's sometimes where we have to start is in that place. But really getting to this place of accepting, you know, people for who they are and what we each bring to the table. And realizing that it's really the synergy of all of us working together that is going to make us great. It's not just one race. It's not just one way of thought. It's not, you know, I don't want to be surrounded by people who just think like me, because there's no growth in that, you know. But I think we've lost our way in our ability to disagree and to hold different beliefs and still have respect for each other. We've lost that. And so hopefully, you know, through our work with Compassionate Dialogue and the protocol, we can be just a part of bringing some of that, that critical dialogue back, but bringing it back in the way where it's respectful and compassionate and helps it with the goal of growth and not of destroying.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So going into the last question of this interview, mm-hmm. which has been lovely, what can we do as individuals that have grown up in the United States, mm-hmm. gone through the public education system that's offered here? How can we challenge some of this rhetoric that we have been, you know, just grown up in?
Yeah. Well, first we have to know the truth, right? And so you can't teach what you don't know. That's a Gary Howard book. But it's also a great saying. If I'm teaching history, and I am a product of the public school system, chances are I don't know history in its fullest. And so one thing that we need to do is educate ourselves, right? And then what I always say is that school districts and have great power, and I'm not even sure they're aware of the power that they have. And I think Nicole illustrated that perfectly in saying that, you know, textbooks companies make money off of districts who spend millions of dollars in textbooks. And these textbooks, you know, they have been around for, like, they usually are in circulation for at least 10 years. So just know that it's not current anymore. By the time it even comes out, it's already 2 or 3 years old, right? the information is dated. And so we do, as school districts, large districts, have the ability to dictate what is in there. And so if we want better, don't buy the ones if they're not meeting the needs, if they're not telling the accurate history, let our money do the walking. And if we don't buy like San Juan decided not to purchase that textbook, guess what? The changes came, right? And that is how we yield our power. People may not care what we think or believe, but they care if it impacts their bottom line, if it's going to impact their profit. And so I'm a firm believer that if you really want to see change and if you believe strongly in something, put your money where your mouth is. Mm-hmm. Either support something through financial support or withhold your support of something if it's not meeting the needs. And be clear, that's why you're doing it, so that the people on the other end have an option to do better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very well said. I think that put the punch in the end of this interview, mm-hmm. and it's a great message for everyone from educators to school districts to the students that have been through it, right? Which anyone that grew up in the United States had to go through it. It wasn't a choice. It was something that we had to go through. Just keeping our eyes open, reflecting, being aware and looking for those primary sources to back up what are our truths and what have been the things that have been kind of fed to us that we've rolled along with because we didn't know any different, right? Yep. This is the time of critical thinking and questioning. Thank you so much, Nancy, for the
My pleasure. It's always nice talking with you, Bailey.
Visit www.epiceducation.com for resources that will help you to understand and navigate the ever-changing world of diversity, equity, and inclusion. We are a company that trains and transforms with innovative in-person and online equity workshops that support school districts and leaders to build capacity to carry on this work internally. Now go out and have an epic day.